This session from the Adelaide Festival of Ideas 2009 was recorded by Radio Adelaide through the support of the Barsmith Library, University of Adelaide, the University of South Australia Library and Flinders University Library.
Welcome to this session of the 2009 Adelaide Festival of Ideas. My name is Michael Barber. I'm Vice Chancellor of Flinders University, and it's my great pleasure this morning to chair this session, of which our speaker will be Dr. Peter Shergold, and I'll say a little about him in a moment before I hand over the lectern to him. I think many people in the audience are, of course, well knowing of the format of the Festival of the Ideas. It's one of, perhaps I think, one of the most exciting festivals in this festival city, and today certainly the theme of pushing the limits, as Robert Fidian said in his foreword, came at a very interesting time where the world, financially, economically, environmentally, is perhaps pushing back on us. So today, we are pleased to hear from Dr. Peter Shergold talking on the theme of Has Corporate Responsibility Reached Its Limits? Peter was appointed to Professor of the Australian School of Business at the University of New South Wales, where he is the Macquarie Group Foundation Chair of the newly established Centre for Social Impact. A cross-university collaboration which aims to deliver business management teaching and research for social enterprises and promote corporate social responsibility. I think many of us have not actually realised how much in Australia that third sector of non-government and social organisations are playing in the full life of the nation. Peter was CEO of the Australian Public Service for over two decades. I first met him back in 2002 when I joined CSIRO, and Peter at that time was Secretary of Education, Science and Training, and he joined the CSIRO board. Prior to that, he'd been Chief Executive Officer of Comcare. He was a Public Service Commissioner from 1995 to 1998. He then served as Department of Employment, Workplace Relations and Small Business, and then transferred, as I said, to the Department of Education, Science and Training. From 5 years, from February 2003, Dr. Shergold was Australia's most senior public administrator, serving as Secretary of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. In all, he served directly three Prime Ministers and eight Ministers in both Coalition and Labor governments. He was made a member of the Order of Australia, AM, for public service in 1996, and in 2007, he was elevated to his Australian highest award, the Companion in the Order of Australia. As a senior officer, you do get to interact with both politicians and public servants at various levels of government. And I have to admit, of all of the senior bureaucrats and public servants I've met in my engagement in public life, Peter Shergold stands right up at the top of them. A man of great integrity, great intelligence, and great fun. I've always enjoyed conversations with Peter. He can be challenging, as you might have been, as you were on the CSIRO board, but wisely challenging, and always in a great role. So with that background of having been an academic, a public servant, and now returned to academia, he is in fact an admirable person to take on an interesting role in the Australian School of Business at the University of New South Wales and to talk to us today about corporate responsibility. Has it reached its limits? Dr. Peter Shergold.
Well, thank you so much for that wonderfully warm introduction. I must say I was somewhat worried when I saw I was doing this session on Sunday morning about whether there would be an audience, but I was more worried, having now done four panel discussions, that I would actually have run out of my stock of ideas by the time that I got here. So I hope that isn't the case, because the issue I want to address this morning, I think, is profoundly important, and it does go to the festival theme about pushing the limits. What I want to do this morning, under the cloud of economic recession, in an environment in which business is doing it tough, and many Australians are doing it far tougher, to talk about corporate responsibility. Corporate responsibility, it's often postulated, is about business doing good because it's good for business. The question is it only good for business when business is good? And that seems to me to imply three other quite fundamental questions related to the limits of corporate responsibility. The first, and it is a profound question, is in what way did corporate responsibility fail us in the global financial crisis? The second is corporate responsibility now collapsing under the strain of worldwide economic recession? And the third, the final question which I will address, is whether corporate responsibility can learn from its failures, can, if you will, make itself over, can reassess and rearticulate and revitalize its ethos and its mission. So as we start to grapple with these ideas, let's look at what the evidence is. The first thing that is clear is that corporate responsibility is a concept that has been made manifest in a variety of different forms. If you think back over the last 10 or 15 years, there are times when it's usually been articulated in terms of business ethics. There was a time a decade ago when many of us will remember it became the thing to do triple bottom line reporting. And then, of course, corporate social responsibility, or CSR, which then often evolved over the last few years into corporate sustainability. Some businesses call it corporate citizenship. All of these, in my address this morning, I'm going to embrace under the notion of corporate responsibility. And the range of activities that is embraced by corporate responsibility are, I think, as rich and as diverse as the semantic vocabulary. You can go and see this for yourself. You can go and look at some of the large Australian corporates and look at the report. They nearly always now produce an annual report on social responsibility or sustainability or citizenship. Go and look at the reports of organisations like the National Australia Bank, Coca-Cola Amatil, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Rio Tinto, McDonald's, all now produce an annual report on what they do in corporate responsibility. Of course, many corporates do it through the foundations that they have established, and they too have annual reports. The AMP Foundation, Telstra, Macquarie Group, Westpac, Qantas. So it's quite easy to pick up the publication. Usually it must be said, a glossy publication. Usually it must be said, full of inspiring photographs. But you can pick that up and get a good sense very quickly of what these corporates see as corporate responsibility. Get a sense of how diverse it is, but also, I think, very quickly get a sense that virtually every business interprets its corporate responsibility different. At its very narrowest, I think you will find that business identifies corporate responsibility with operating within the law, responsible business practices, honest governance, effectively not just meeting the letter of the law, but the spirit and purpose of the law. That, I think, is the narrowest definition. But corporate responsibility today is usually seen as going beyond what is legally necessary. So that, for example, it is usually seen to embrace fair labour conditions for workers, and a good occupational health and safety scheme, and promoting workforce diversity. In most instances, to a greater or lesser extent, it embraces the support of community endeavour, not just providing financial support for community organisations, but in particular providing pro bono and volunteer support to the community sector. In the last decade, increasingly, that corporate responsibility has taken the form of environmental responsibility, with an emphasis on energy efficiency and offsetting the production of emissions and reducing carbon footprints. It has, or should, also embrace the notion of ethical governance arrangements within the business. And crucially, it should always embrace reporting on this range of activities in an open and transparent manner. Now, I'd have to say that for most of the large corporations now, corporate responsibility is not just what we sometimes label a tier one activity. What I mean by that is that it has been extended backwards along the supply chain. In other words, increasingly it's recognised that resource production or manufacturing in multinational companies that are located or headquartered in the developed world is being sourced from developing countries. And therefore, as you look down the supply chain, there is a greater emphasis on issues such as product safety and human rights. What I find interesting is that corporate responsibility, as it has become increasingly global over the last decade, as its nature has evolved, so it has taken on the particular emphasis, which is often quite different from corporate responsibility as it's been articulated in North America and Europe and Australia and New Zealand. We talk about corporate responsibility as something that has emerged from the corporate sector. China now embraces corporate responsibility. Its major business schools include it in their curricula. And yet it is, in a sense, quite different, because for the Chinese government, they see this as important as a fundamental basis of creating a harmonious society. You go to countries like Singapore, where I went earlier this year, and you can see that when they talk about corporate responsibility, it is something that has actually been driven by government. It is the Singapore government that has brought together corporates and unions in a very Singaporean way to embrace corporate responsibility. So it means different things to different companies in different countries. Certainly in the developed world, it has evolved from notions of charity or even philanthropy to the notion of social investment. Just as the economic activities of the firm bring a return to shareholders, so corporate responsibility activities bring a return to society in which the business operates. Concurrently, corporate responsibility is no longer just seen as doing good for society. It is increasingly argued that it does good for business. Now, let me just make two things clear, because I don't want to be misinterpreted in the final stage of my remarks. The first is that I have no doubt whatever that the activities embraced as corporate responsibility have benefited society in many different ways. So we're not arguing about this. It has done good. Corporate support for emergency relief and social welfare and environmental sustainability, corporate support for heritage protection and support of the arts and education and medical research, and so on, has been beneficial. That's not an argument. Business, through these activities, has made our society a better place. And indeed, I'd go further. In some instances, I can see that corporate Australia has been willing to engage and take a stand in areas where governments have feared to tread. The most obvious instance, I think, is the willingness of many of Australia's mining companies to seriously engage in Indigenous community support and training and employment and education, often to pick up where governments have failed. Some of you may have noticed that last week in The Weekend Australia, Noel Pearson was outraged about the way governments were now claiming the Cape York initiatives. And I understand why, because those were initiatives that came from the community. And the first organisations that he won to support them were not governments or public services. They were corporates and corporate foundations. It was governments that came in somewhat reluctantly later. The second thing I want to make clear is that corporate expenditure on corporate responsibility is undoubtedly being wound back. So this is not a cause of argument. Are corporate responsibility activities now being reduced? The answer categorically is yes. As businesses tighten their belts, they are tightening too their responsibility belts. And the amount of financial support being provided by corporates and foundations, although it is continuing, is being reduced. In early next month, I'm bringing out a very important study, I think, supported, interestingly, by PricewaterhouseCoopers, as well as the Fundraising Institute of Australia, which is looking in detail at what impact the economic recession is having on community organisation funding, and as part of that, what is happening to corporate support. I think it's a very interesting story. If any of you would like to make sure you get access to that straight away, if you come down at the end and give me an email address, I will make sure that you're sent that early next month. So those are two statements, but the important question is, will the activities of corporate responsibility, the very concept of corporate responsibility, survive this significant economic recession? Has it reached its limits? I've got to tell you, this is one humdinger of a debate. We could have had a really good panel discussion on this, because there are two antithetical views. On the positive side, there are those who believe that companies that have built their responsible business reputation at some considerable cost over many years are not now readily going to sacrifice it for short-term financial savings. The positive argument is that a global financial crisis that has undermined public trust in business ethics, and in which the natural impulse of governments will now be to regulate corporate activities, in that environment, corporate responsibility is more important rather than less important. On the other side of this debate, on the negative side, there are those who believe that actually there never was any real substantive quality to corporate responsibility. It was a fig leaf of social responsibility, driven by corporate communications, embracing things like the greenwashing of corporate products, not fully embraced or understood by senior management or the board. It was, in other words, a valuable illusion created by public relations spin, a publicity stunt. As one businessman once described it to me, a launch, a lunch, and a logo. And me? Well, my answer, and I'll give it to you now, and just in case you want to leave early and see if there are some other better sessions around. My answer is yes, corporate responsibility will survive. There will be reduced financial commitment in the short term. There will be a separation at the corporate level between the true believers and the fellow travellers. Having said that, I think that corporate responsibility will only properly grow if it is transformed. And now what I want to tell you is why I've come to that conclusion, which is actually a more interesting story than the bold outcome. Corporate responsibility, I'm using that now as a shorthand for all this diversity of activities, will survive if it is, actually is, seen as good for business. This is important. Too often one sees the community and environmental activities of businesses being criticised in the media as cynical ploys. You'll see, you know, business isn't doing this because they really care, but because they see there are some advantages to themselves. They're getting something out of this activity. I've got to tell you, I think that is a completely, utterly wrong-headed line of attack. What we should look for in a corporate responsibility program is something that is mutually advantageous, a genuine partnership between the private and the community or third sectors. For it's that benefit to business that is going to sustain and to strengthen community benefit. And what are the avowed benefits to business? Well, I will give you four. First, there is a view that it is very important in increasing loyalty of employees. The fact is that many of those who work in the private sector relate more strongly to a company that shows itself committed to fair labour conditions and ONH standards and community support and environmental responsibility. People want to work for companies that support not-for-profit organisations, that provide time off to employees to volunteer, which promote payroll giving in the workplace. Many companies tell me that they find it easier to recruit top talent and to retain it and to maintain its enthusiasm and increase its morale by the fact that the staff, the employees, identify with the corporate responsibility activities of the company for which they work. The second, of course, it's meant to promote the loyalty of customers and clients. Now, often in the past, this has been made manifest only when there is a negative campaign against a business. And therefore, there is a tendency to see corporate responsibility as preparing you for negative publicity. We know how damaging it is when companies become exposed because their products are unsafe, or because they have exploited child labour, or they are not involved in fair trade, or they are not environmentally safe. All of those things can and do directly affect the financial bottom line of companies, and everything from training shoes to diamonds to wool to toys to chocolate and coffee. But increasingly, corporates are now saying, let's not just have a defence, but let's actually go on the front foot and be proactive in this area. Take ethical standards to the marketplace and thereby build consumer support and client support for our products and our business. The third is that it can be very useful in terms of loyalty of investors, because what's happened particularly over the last decade is there is increasingly a movement by those who want to invest ethically, to at the very least do no harm, and hopefully to do good from one's investment. So you've got the emergence of ethical investment firms. This too can feed into the financial bottom line of companies. And fourth, of course, you can actually get direct cost savings out of responsible activity. Better occupational health and safety improves the bottom line. Greater energy efficiency, reduced travel, improves the bottom line. Rising investment in green power is often driven by a quite rational economic expectation that demand for clean power is going to increase. So these economic benefits, I think, are important. It's got to be said, though, having told you that there are these potential economic benefits, that the reality of corporate responsibility is often far less persuasive than the rhetoric. Because if you actually look at what many businesses do,
It is not clearly related to the business of their business. It's often marked by a lack of coherence. What we often find is the projects that are supported by business are the ones that are close to the heart of the chairman or the CEO or members of the board, with very little relationship to their business. There tends to be a lack of strategy. It's often, if you look, driven by the public relations, corporate communications part of the business, not discussed very frequently at the board level, not understood by senior management, not seen as a real contribution to investment, and it's often marked in reality by a lack of consistency between the business of the business and the business of corporate responsibility. And it's that last part, I think, which is the potentially life-threatening weakness of corporate responsibility. And it has been traumatically exposed by the global financial crisis. It's going to take some years to write a comprehensive economic history of what happened over the last two or three years. But I think the key elements are already starkly apparent. There was poor management of the substantial and growing risk attached to the opaque nature of bundles of securitized borrowings and collateralized debt. There was insufficient attention to the inadequacy of the capital required to support the trading of those investments. It was driven by super profits and excessive remuneration that could be gained in the short term on the basis of heavily leveraged activity. It could not last. And now, of course, as the world deleverages, we're undergoing a profound period of redemption. So let's just quickly come to a summary. What do we then know of the key features of the global financial crisis? One, that there was inadequate management of risk with the potential for very real reputational damage. Second, that you had structures of decision-making and structures of incentivation which were short-term and unsustainable. And third, that the opaqueness of the system, the opaqueness of the financial products, of the structures that underlay the movement of capital and debt, the opaqueness of the governance of decision-making prevailed. Reputational risk, unsustainable growth, inadequate transparency, poor governance. Any history of the global financial crisis will expose those. Now just think. What do we know about what are meant to be the avowed benefits of corporate responsibility? It's the mirror image. First, that corporate responsibility is intended to enhance public reputation, improve your reputation with clients and customers and investors and employees, to persuade the public that the company cares about them, to persuade governments that the companies can themselves self-regulate. And that's what corporate responsibility is meant to do. Second, it's meant to position a company so it can sustain its activities over the long term. And third, corporate responsibility is based upon greater levels of transparency and openness in the way it reports its activities. So here is the crunch. The behaviours that were the business of the business turned out to be the mirror opposite of the values which were meant to underlie corporate responsibility. The exact opposite. And worst, the experts didn't see it coming. They had their eyes on the wrong ball. And I'm not just talking here about the financial markets or governments. I'm talking about those socially responsible investment funds who may have taken your money because you wanted to make sure you were investing your money ethically. To tell you, where did they put your money? Lehman Brothers, Citigroup, Bear Stearns, Northern Rock, Fannie Mae. This is where ethical investments were being made. What went wrong? Well, the investment funds were looking at the external part of corporate responsibility. Wasn't it wonderful that they had a program to reduce carbon emissions, a program to get more women and black people in positions of authority, supporting community enterprises, supporting medical research? In other words, they were looking at the external manifestation of corporate responsibility rather than going back into the business of the business and seeing how that was being conducted. And that, I think, is the real tragedy. So, in my view, corporations, businesses, need to rebuild corporate responsibility in a way which ensures that the internal management and governance and the external manifestations of social and environmental responsibility are, in fact, premised and predicated on the same values of reputation, sustainability, openness, good governance. A corporate responsibility that has a strategic coherence that can be readily understood not only by customers and investors and suppliers, but by all those who work for the company. A corporate responsibility that responds not only to government policy and public expectations, but learns from and is informed by the experience of the community sector. Because let us remember, it is not-for-profit organisations who have had generations of experience in having to balance community mission against financial sustainability. In conclusion, I'm cautiously optimistic that beyond the current economic gloom, driven by the redemptive lessons of the global financial crisis and the regulatory impulse of governments, there will emerge a new articulation of corporate responsibility, one that's based on collaborative leadership across the public, private, community sectors. A corporate responsibility that genuinely sees its labour and social and environmental activities as the foundation of sustainable wealth creation. And what gives me so much cautious optimism isn't only that large businesses and small businesses are reassessing how they have articulated what they've done, but I think more importantly, because although corporate profits and dividends and shareholder value have all fallen significantly, consumer consciences have not been put on hold. The public will still demand corporate responsibility. I look forward to a form of corporate responsibility explicitly founded on a notion of a social contract, that corporate responsibility is the basis on which we should give business a license to operate in a market economy. Very happy to answer questions on any of it.
I think the warm applause says it all. Thank you for a very interesting and challenging little speech and presentation. And I suppose one thing we can take away, that if the next generation of corporate leaders are going to come through business schools, then I'm sure that your students in the months and years ahead will have a great foundation on which they will deliver that, that pen. Can I? We have perhaps 10 minutes or so. Questions up the back there.
Yes, Peter, I found the diagnosis. That you made was very good, and the long-term interests of corporations and society hopefully going on the same track. Good ideas there, but the thing that struck me was, I think I can say, all voluntary. I'm sceptical, and I think someone like Richard Dennis would be very sceptical, that we can trust business to that extent. So, how much can we legislate for these sorts of things? And I think that we need to do it. We need to sometimes have that compulsion. Sometimes we can't trust companies to do these sorts of things. And the sorts of problems we're facing is climate change alone, for example. We need to go more powerfully, more quickly than just hoping that they're going to do the right thing. And it's a sort of moral persuasion. We need to, I think, sometimes at least have some sort of genuine compulsion and enforce it. government to make sure they do what needs to be done?
I agree with that. I mean, it is the challenge of getting the balance between the genuine benefits of the market with the need to regulate its activities. I think what has happened in the last 2 years is that corporate responsibility has failed in a quite comprehensive way to live up to its argument that in most instances it could be expected to self-regulate. It has destroyed its reputation. I am certain as polls appear, as they appear each year, on levels of trust, we will have seen a very significant reduction in levels of trust for business. But of course, ironically, I suspect it will also match declining levels of trust in governments and politicians at the very point, I think you're right, at which it is probably necessary for there to be greater regulatory intervention. I think that, on the whole, the state is not good at regulating ethics. And our expectations of business should be more, and their own expectation should be more, than what is required of the regulatory framework. Having said that, I would strongly support, for example, increased regulation of business into the future, which would set limits on the extent of capital that is required to underpin the variety of financial derivatives that is being traded. And that was a clear failure. I would even, but I'd have to say more reluctantly, have greater regulatory control over the remuneration paid. I mean, I understand why people, including myself, can be outraged by levels of remuneration. But it seems to me, although that's the part that's most publicly visible, the really dangerous part is the systems and the structures and the culture which gave rise to that executive remuneration, which was always short-term. So I think there does need to be regulation. I think there will be greater government regulation. I don't think it will be sufficient, and I would always look to a definition of corporate responsibility that goes significantly beyond the legal and regulatory requirements.
Question over here.
You mentioned that corporate responsibility sometimes means different things to different companies in different countries, and you cited Singapore as an example where the government had engendered a high degree of corporate responsibility, and perhaps that reflects a deeper cultural situation in that country. But I'm interested to ask you, companies that operate in two countries, more countries around the world, do you find that they settle at the government's expected level of corporate responsibility in different countries, or do they standardise their corporate responsibility across the globe? Is there something that governments, is there evidence that government expectations therefore do affect this or not?
I think one of the benefits of multinational corporations with long supply chains is that increasingly they are expected to behave in a way which meets the standard of the developed country, which is usually greater. So that it is no longer okay to say, well, the child labour that we are using in Bangladesh fully meets Bangladeshi legal requirements, because people are now expecting it to judge it by the standards of Australia or the United States or the United Kingdom. I think one of the most hopeful aspects of corporate responsibility is the way that it can move down the supply chain. Now, by doing that, it gets corporates into some very uncomfortable areas, because often when you're dealing with labour in some of these countries, it isn't just about occupational health and safety or fair labour standards. It does go quite fundamentally to the issue of human rights. And my view is that if you're a company operating here in Australia, you can't ignore the issue of human rights in many of the countries in which you are producing resources or undertaking your manufacturing.
Another question down here. Yes.
You've just mentioned human rights, and previously you mentioned the need for fair labour practices. And my question focuses on the role of the media in spreading this message so that you get this public perception of corporate responsibility. But in that regard, I would like to say that when Mrs. Walker managed to break through the glass ceiling and get a directorship in the National Australia Bank, she was quickly ditched because she wanted an outside firm to investigate wrongdoings within the organisation. And that's all she wanted. And she tried to do it quietly behind the scenes, and nothing happened. So she went public, so she now whistleblowed. Mm. And then she got ditched from her directorship in the National Australia Bank. But in terms of the media response, the Financial Times were quick off the mark in reporting that when her other directorships expired, she would never again get a significant directorship in any a directorship in any significant company. That's what they reported. So I'm wondering how all this fits in with the idea of human rights, because surely she had human rights for the breach.
Yep, yep.
And there wasn't any question of justice, you know.
Well, let me take the general rather than the specific issue, which I can't comment on. And it's been fascinating. I think every session that I have been on a panel at this festival has in one way or another come back to the role of the media and the role that the media plays. And it is important. I think that this is an area in which the media can play and has played very often a very valuable role by particularly internationally, exposing unfair labour standards or inadequate human rights. So the media has been valuable in that regard, particularly when it's doing what it does best, which is being negative. One of the difficulties I have in this area is that it's very, very difficult to get the media to take an interest in a positive story. I can always get the media to take an interest in yet another story about the appalling status of Indigenous social and economic disadvantage. But it is almost impossible to get the media to take an interest in a hopeful and positive story of Indigenous achievement. And so I think that the media can be extraordinarily powerful in pushing and promoting corporate responsibility by the way it opens corporate activities to scrutiny. I wish it played a more positive role in supporting what is positive that is happening. I mean, as you said in your introduction, we work in and live in an Australia which has 750,000 not-for-profit organisations doing a variety of most extraordinarily beneficial things. Most of us are members, and yet none of us realise how important this is because it never genuinely makes the media. It simply exists below the radar of media interest.
Well, I'm afraid my KPI is to keep everyone on time, because there are other sessions which are about to start, and I'm sure people in the audience. It's always a measure of a talk if when the chair has to shut off question time, and I apologise for that, but I would like you all to join me in one final round of applause. Thank you.
This session from the Adelaide Festival of Ideas 2009 was recorded by Radio Adelaide through the support of the Barsmith Library, University of Adelaide, the University of South Australia Library, and Flinders University Library.